Welcome to episode 175 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for March 28th, 2011. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, Virginia adopts an Idaho-style stop law. The New York Police Department apologizes to cyclists for speeding tickets. Garmin sues another manufacturer for patent infringement. Cliff Bar, owners open a winery in the Napa Valley, and man, you messed with the wrong cyclist. Following the general news, it's pro cycling news, including recent race results, the UCI World Tour rankings, a little bit more on the radio ban, and the UCI appeals Contador's acquittal. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. And this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast because Jensen USA is the place where you can find the best selection, the best prices, and the best customer service. And this week they are focusing, on a brand new shipment of bikes from Focus. You've seen Team Katusha riding them, but now can you see yourself riding one? And as a matter of fact, with Jensen USA's amazing prices on Focus's line of bikes, I think you can. Examples, the Focus Variato, a performance aluminum road bike with Shimano 105 components for just $675. Or how about the Focus Kayo, carbon fiber racing frame with a true racing lineage for just $1,650. That's 28% off the MSRP. Go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link, or go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Thanks to jensenusa.com for supporting the Fredcast, and thank you for supporting jensenusa.com. If you ride a bicycle, a motorcycle, or even a moped in the state of Virginia, you're going to be celebrating when you hear this story. And that's because House Bill 1981, which takes effect on July 1st, is going to allow you to pass through a red light as long as there's no oncoming traffic after you wait 120 seconds or two cycles of the light. Not quite an Idaho-style stop bill, but certainly something that cyclists in the state of Virginia and perhaps in a lot of other locations will definitely appreciate it. Here's the deal. How many times have you come up to a stoplight, dutifully stopped for it, say always please folks, but the light doesn't change because there's probably some loop sensors in the road that are waiting for a heavy metallic vehicle or a lot of metal to be over them so that it senses that it's time to change. And you sit and you wait and you wait. Now you have a choice. You can sit there and continue to wait, or you can break the law. Well, now this bill that has been signed into law by Governor Bob McDonnell would allow you, under those circumstances I just described, to go through the red light without waiting for it to change. According to Delegate Thomas Greeson, who sponsored HB 1981, quote, "The bill is designed to increase the safety for those riders who ride motorcycles, mopeds, or bicycles. When they approach and are stranded at an intersection, and the weight of their vehicle is not great enough to trigger the light, and they're stranded at a red light, and they really don't have any legal options available to them under today's code." Unquote. Now, there were plenty of people who questioned the intelligence of this law, worried what might happen if somebody pulled out in one of these circumstances and caused an accident. To that, Greeson said, quote, "Imagine that the red light is a stop sign. If the motorcyclist, you can imagine cyclist or moped rider, pulls out onto oncoming traffic and causes an accident, he would have the same liability if he was at a red light or if he was at a stop sign." Unquote. HB 1981 passed the House in Virginia on a 75-24 vote in January, and then the Senate in Virginia unanimously approved the bill with one amendment that that emphasize that cyclists and motorcyclists who proceed through a red light must yield to oncoming traffic. That was then approved 87-11 in the House and then sent to the governor, who has signed it. This bill goes into effect July the 1st. And from Virginia, we travel to the state of Texas, where San Antonio has gotten the first of its kind in Texas bicycle sharing plan. It's San Antonio B-Cycle, where they'll be placing 14 B-Cycle stations, or B stations, all around downtown San Antonio in very visible and highly trafficked areas. Just like all the other bike share programs we've talked about, this will allow B-Cycle members to pick up one of these gray bicycles at any B station and drop it off at any other B station. San Antonio B-Cycle launched last weekend with 140 bikes available for checkout from 14 bike stations spread across downtown. In the next 2 years, the goal is to have 500 bicycles at 50 stations. There's no charge to use the bicycles for a half hour at a time, but each subsequent half hour costs just $2. There are links in the show notes where you can get more information on the San Antonio B-Cycle program. Moving back across the country to the East Coast, we move to the island of Manhattan. And if you've been to New York City, you know that one of the biggest tourist attractions, indeed one of the biggest attractions for New Yorkers, is Central Park, the urban oasis that it's called. And for many cyclists, the car-free hours in the early mornings are an oasis from pedestrians and joggers and automobiles and dog walkers, and allow the best opportunity to get out on their bikes and train. This year, however, it seems that the New York Police Department is definitely cracking down on cyclists as a result of what they call a number of recent incidents in the park. As a result, they've issued already this year 230 summonses to cyclists, as compared to 160 summonses last year to motorists and only 62 the year before. On a recent day this March, police officers parked two unmarked vehicles in Central Park and began radaring cyclists and issuing citations. They gave out 10 tickets to cyclists during the early morning car-free hours, and then later had to take the very unusual step of knocking on some of those cyclist doors and letting them know that they made a mistake and the citations should not have been issued. Cyclists were issued these citations for riding 22 to 25 miles per hour as per the radar that the police officers were carrying. However, there's some controversy because the posted speed limit on this section of road in Central Park is 25 miles per hour, although on other sections it's posted as 15 miles per hour. Of the 10 summonses, 9 of them were voided. However, the 10th cyclist was riding at 28 miles per hour and was therefore correctly cited, according to police officers. According to the Central Park website, the park is closed to vehicle traffic Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. the following morning, and on weekends from 7 p.m. Friday to 7 a.m. Monday. When the park is open to traffic, there is always a bicycle lane available. However, again, quoting the Central Park website, we do not recommend using the drives when they are open to traffic. The park is closed to all visitors from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. And there is a proposal, by the way, in those early morning car-free hours to turn all traffic signals in the park to blinking yellow, thereby allowing cyclists free rein within the park, within reason. Obviously, pedestrians and runners and joggers and dog walkers have the right of way, but allowing cyclists to proceed through the park without having to stop at traffic signals. The League of American Bicyclists recently concluded their annual National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C., and as part of the National Bike Summit this year, they announced their first ever bicycle-friendly university designations. Now, some 32 universities in the United States applied, and 20 of them received designations, with the top spot and the only platinum award going to Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. The program recognizes colleges and universities that create exceptional environments where bicycling can thrive and provides a roadmap and technical assistance to create great campuses for bicycling. I love this program myself. I remember when I was going to UC San Diego back in the 80s, I know it seems like ancient history, I recall that many of my friends and colleagues were riding their bicycles around campus, and then the administration slammed the door on us, letting everyone know that bicycles had to remain on the periphery of campus along the circular road around the school, and that bikes would no longer be allowed to be ridden across campus. So it's great to see that now 20 universities are getting accolades for being bicycle friendly. Now, Bill Nesper is the director of the Bike League's Bicycle Friendly America program, and he was quoted as saying, quote, "Universities have long served as incubators for developing bike-friendly cultures and practices, and that has a big impact on the expectations that students bring to the workplace and beyond. With the launch of the Bicycle Friendly Universities program, we're able to highlight the crucial role that academic institutions play in shaping a more bike-friendly future." So who are the bike-friendly universities? Well, again, Platinum Awards going to Stanford University, Gold Awards going to the University of California, Davis, and UC Santa Barbara, Silver Awards to Cal State Long Beach, Colorado State University, Portland State University, the University of Arizona, UC Irvine, University of Minnesota, University of Oregon, University of Washington, and the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And bronze awards going to Boise State, Cornell, Emory, Indiana University, Michigan State, UCLA, go Bruins, University of Maryland College Park, and the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Well, here's a story we do every year because it's the time of year when Yellowstone National Park officials open the road from the west entrance of Yellowstone to Mammoth, and it's only open for cyclists. This occurred last Friday after they plowed the road and removed an average of 4 feet of snow. Now, the route remains closed to vehicular or motorized vehicular traffic until the park roads open for the summer season somewhere around mid-April, around April 15th. According to Yellowstone spokesman Al Nash, quote, "There will be roughly 3 weeks that we have that section open to bicycling." He then said, "Riders from the area understand that this can be a great experience for those properly prepared, but it is not a ride to be taken on a whim," unquote. And the reason for that is that despite the fact that the plows have removed all of that snow, and despite the fact that it is spring, this part of the country has still been getting quite a bit of snow. Therefore, the roads can still have some road ice and snow on them. And you have to remember that early in the season, officials put down wood chips to facilitate grooming for snowmobiles and for snow coaches in the wintertime. Plus, conditions in this part of the country can change rapidly. These are the mountains, and they don't call it the wilderness for nothing. Plus, speaking of wilderness, don't forget that at any time you could encounter, well, a bear, perhaps an elk, or even a group of bison. And according to Nash, if you break down, you have to be ready to deal with that challenge. Now, the most popular bike ride during the off-season is from the west entrance to Madison, which is a 14-mile trip each way. And then the leg from Madison to Norris is another 14 miles, followed by the 21-mile leg from Norris to Mammoth. I said this last year, I say it every year, I have got to get up there 1 year and go ride these roads, probably on my mountain bike, I'm thinking. But if you get the chance to do it, send us some pictures or a video or even some audio. We would love to share it with your fellow Fredcast listeners. Now, if you head up to Yellowstone and you want to go on a ride, chances are you might want to bring your GPS with you. And speaking of GPS, Garmin has filed a patent infringement against a Taiwanese company called Briton, B-R-Y-T-O-N, for patent infringement on bicycle computers. The suit was filed in U.S. District Court in Kansas City, Kansas, Garmin accusing Brighton of, quote, mimicking the appearance and functionality, unquote, of Garmin's Edge bicycle computer. Now, officials with Brighton, headquartered in Taipei City, Taiwan, could not be reached for comment, but Andrew Edkind, Garmin's vice president and general counsel, said, quote, the company is proud of the intellectual property rights awarded to our innovative products, and we have little tolerance for companies that attempt to trade unfairly on those rights, unquote. Garmin seeking a preliminary injunction to bar the sale of Brighton's Rider 30 computer product in the United States. Now, in related development, a district court in Germany has issued a preliminary injunction against Brighton and several of its German distributors, banning the sale of the Rider 30 in Germany. I had the opportunity to take a look at the Brighton website. I put a link in the show notes. If you take a look at either the Rider 30 or the Rider 50 cycle computers, I think that you will understand why Garmin is upset and why they are suing for patent infringement. It'll probably be a while before we get a decision in this case. An injunction is possible in the meantime. I'll keep you posted. I'm curious, though, if any of you in the audience have a Brighton computer or whether you've seen one or used one and what your thoughts are about the similarities between the Brighton product and the Garmin product. And if it's too cold for you still in Yellowstone and you're also looking to get a nice bottle of red, check out the new Velo Vino Napa Valley Winery, which is just opened by Gary Erickson and Kit Crawford, the owners of Cliff Bar and the Cliff Family Winery and Farm. The Velo Vino Napa Valley Tasting Room is at the southern end of Main Street in St. Helena, California. It's open to visitors 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily with extended summer hours beginning in June, and it offers tastings of the Cliff Family Winery Napa Valley wines along with pairings of Gary and Kit's gourmet food products. According to their press release, this is more than an average tasting room because it also pays tribute to Gary's love of cycling. Whether it's one of the thousands of bike enthusiasts who visit Napa Valley each year or local weekend road warriors, cyclists visiting Velo Vino can pick up maps of local bike routes and customized rides to Cliff Family Farm on Howell Mountain. Velo Vino also offers retail sales featuring Cliff Family wines, food products from the farm, espresso, every cyclist needs that, bike jerseys, Cliff bars, Luna bars, and a stunning, quote-unquote, collection of athletic apparel for women is also available. According to Gary Erickson, quote, Velo Vino is a place for slowing down and spending time with family and friends over a great bottle of wine. With so many cyclists riding through Napa Valley, we also recognize that cycling and wine are a natural fit, parentheses, hopefully not together, close parentheses. Because cycling is such a passion of ours, we wanted to create a central hub for congregating and connecting the two. I'd say that Velo Vino was built to fuel the adventurer's soul. Co-founder and co-owner Kit Crawford said, quote, imagine starting your day at Velo Vino with a shot of espresso as you map out your bike ride and grab a few Cliff bars. Then finish your ride back at Velo Vino and relax with a glass of wine in our sensory garden. We want Velo Vino to be the source for starting and ending that perfect day. Sounds perfect to me. And speaking of perfect, how about some perfect justice? A 68-year-old Portland, Oregon man was accused of attempted second-degree assault Tuesday night in connection with an altercation involving a bicyclist. And in this case, it turns out that he messed with the wrong cyclist because the cyclist was a police officer on his way to work. Now, this happened about 6 a.m. one morning when Sergeant Joe Santos, who rides back and forth to work on his bike, was riding toward the city. An SUV passed the cyclist within just inches, scaring the cyclist enough to fear for his life. Further on down the road at a stop sign, he ended up next to the SUV again, and the SUV turned into the cyclist, almost hitting him. And then about a block later, the driver stopped suddenly, so that the cyclist Santos had to veer into oncoming traffic. Now, as he went around the SUV, he did slap the vehicle to let the driver know that he was there. The response? The driver put the vehicle in reverse and attempted to hit him. He hopped off his bike, grabbed it, and ran to the sidewalk. It was then that the driver put the car in drive and hit the officer's bike. The officer had to jump out of the way to avoid being hit. The driver then sped off. Santos, using his police training, remembered the license plate number of the car, and a short time later, police arrested 68-year-old Larry Fornshell and took him to jail. Now that is perfect justice. Well, that's going to do it for the general news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. And before we get into the pro cycling news, I'd like to tell you about another one of our sponsors, Epic Planet. TV. Go to epicplanet.tv/Fredcast and check out their latest release, coincidentally, considering the penultimate story tonight, Epic Wine Country. Now, I had the opportunity to ride Epic Wine Country earlier this week, and as always, it's absolutely gorgeous. The heads-up display is fantastic. The quality is amazing, and it was a great ride through Northern California's Napa Valley. I've had the opportunity to ride there myself and doing it virtually by DVD. Well, it wasn't quite there, but it definitely got me through my indoor training. It's a beautiful release, another gorgeous bit of cinematography from Alan and the team at Epic Rides. And from now through the end of April, you can get 20% off the Epic Wine Country DVD, digital download, or combo pack. To get your 20% off, use the coupon code WINE, that's W-I-N-E, at checkout. That's epicplanet.tv/Fredcast. We thank Epic Planet for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Epic Planet. Well, let's catch up on some results from some recent professional cycling races, starting with, well, the opener of the one-day classics season, Milan-San Remo. This year won by HTC Highroads' Matt Goss. 184 miles in 6 hours, 51 minutes. Leading and winning an 8-man group that formed in the last few kilometers of the event and beating out Fabian Cancellara, who took second place, and Philippe Gilbert from Belgium. Rounding out the top 10, Alessandro Bayan, Filippo Pozzato, Michele Scarponi, Joan Ofredo, and Vincenzo Nibali. Coming in ninth, Greg Van Avermaet and Stuart O'Grady from Leopard Trek. Tom Bonin won his first race of the season, winning a bunch sprint at the finish of this year's Gent-Wevelgem, winning the first of the cobble events of the spring season. Bonin pipped Daniela Benatti from Leopard Trek and Tyler Farah of Team Garmin Cervelo at the finish line. He was quoted as saying, "It's a great win that boosts the morale of our whole team. Everyone did a fantastic job today. It was quite emotional to cross the finish line here today. Winning this race after so many years has a special flavor to it." Asked whether or not this would affect next week's Tour of Flanders or the Ronde van Vlaanderen, Bonin said, quote, "This doesn't make much difference for the Ronde. They're two different things. I need to improve a bit to be in top form for the Ronde. This week, I will only focus on training and resting when I'm not pedaling." But perhaps the event that everyone had their eyes on this week was the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, or the Tour of Catalonia in Spain. And the reason why everyone's eyes were on it was because Alberto Contador came away with the final victory in this event in 29 hours, 24 minutes, and 42 seconds. This coming after the UCI decided earlier in the week to appeal his acquittal on doping charges to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Despite all of that, Contador was quoted at the end of the race as saying that he didn't come to the race to prove anything to anyone or to counter anything going on in the doping case that is surrounding him. Instead, he simply came to race. Second place in the overall in the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya went to Michele Scarpone from Italy, 23 seconds behind Contador. Third place going to Daniel Martin from Garmin-Cervelo. Fourth to Chris Horner from Team Radio Shack. And fifth to Rigoberto Urán from Team Sky. American Levi Leipheimer from Team Radio Shack, who had been in second place overall heading into Sunday's final stage of the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, had to pull out of the event as a result of a previous injury. According to the Team Radio Shack website, Levi has scar tissue and adhesions in his intestines from an injury he received when he was a child when he was kicked in the stomach by a horse. This can occasionally cause blockages. In this case, however, while he did have pain and he had to go to the hospital for overnight observation, the obstruction didn't turn into something serious and he was able to leave the hospital the next morning. We do wish Levi well and hope for a speedy and full recovery. Well, as the result of a full week of racing, there are new UCI World Tour rankings. Matt Goss from Team HTC High Road remains atop the rankings as he was last week. Second place, just 1 point behind from Team Lamprey, is Michele Scarpone. In third place, Cadel Evans. In fourth, Tony Martin. And moving into fifth place this week, Alberto Contador from Team Saxo Bank. Cameron Meyer is in sixth, Ivan Basso in seventh, Andreas Kloden in eighth, followed by Fabian Cancellara, and 10th place, Philippe Gilbert from the Omega Pharmalotto team. Well, racing season is in full swing. We have a lot of racing coming up, including some of the famous spring one-day classics and some Grand Tour action as well. Next up, this coming weekend, the Tour of Flanders, the Ron van Vlaanderen on April the 3rd. Coming up after that, the Vuelta Ciclista a País Vasco, April 4th through the 9th, followed the next weekend by Paris-Roubaix, the Hell of the North, on April the 10th. The next weekend, the Amstel Gold Race takes place on April the 17th, followed 3 days later by the Flèche Wallonne. Then Liège-Bastogne-Liège on April 24th, then the Tour de Romandie, April 26th through May the 1st, and finally, the first Grand Tour of the season, May 7th through the 29th. It's the Giro d'Italia, and Alberto Contador has his sights set on the first Grand Tour of the season. Last week, I spent a good amount of time talking to you about the UCI's radio ban, wherein they are not allowing the pro cyclists to wear the earpieces and microphones that allow them to communicate with their team cars and their directors sportif. I got a lot of emails on this and a few comments on the website for show number 175. Someone, a listener, asking me, why not just give the racers the ability to listen, to receive transmissions, so that this would address the safety concerns that so many riders, including Jens Voigt, have raised? And in retrospect, I think it's a great idea. If, as the UCI says, the reason for wanting to institute a radio ban is to bring more of the excitement back to racing, make it more exciting for both television fans as well as on-the-road spectators, put more of the strategy and tactics into the brains of the cyclists themselves, as opposed to those cyclists being commanded, if you will, by their directors sportif. If this really is the reason behind the radio ban, well, then why not allow the cyclists the option to at least tune in and listen to Radio Tour? Now, if you've listened to the Fredcast for any length of time, you're probably already aware of the fact that at the front of the peloton, in the lead commissaire's car, in every professional cycling race, is someone who handles radio transmissions, official radio transmissions, on behalf of race officials, and that's officially called Radio Tour. Radio Tour broadcasts in English and in French. providing information on road conditions, safety hazards, on-the-road rulings and rule changes, when you're allowed to feed, when you're not allowed to feed, who needs support from their team car for clothing changes or bike changes, providing just general status updates out on the road. My contention is, why not allow the riders to tune into Radio Tour? And then, if the concern really is one of safety, the riders would get as much advance notice as the director sportif would have, but they'll get it as soon as it is transmitted over Radio Tour. Now, Neil Brown commented on Twitter as we were sort of having a discussion about this last weekend that, truthfully, some of the riders speak neither English nor French. My idea, therefore, is if you don't speak English or French, then those riders around you who are tuning into Radio Tour have a responsibility when there's a safety hazard to inform you of it. And if it is proven that riders nearby did not do so, then they should be sanctioned. Remember, in a professional cycling race, there are lots of eyes and ears out on the road. Team cars, commissars, officials, referees, volunteers, motos, neutral technical support, TV crews, helicopters, and a myriad number of other people out on the road, many of whom do have the capability of communicating with Radio Tour. So this really does solve the issue of providing more excitement on the road while also providing an added measure of safety for the cyclist. Too often in life, we tend to polarize our views and we sink our feet in and we say we will not budge. On the one hand is the UCI, no radios, period. On the other hand, riders and teams who are saying we need radios at least for safety. To me, this seems like the best compromise. I'm curious to hear what you think. Meanwhile, you'll also recall that last week I mentioned that USA Cycling, the sanctioning body here in the United States for professional cycling, was about to get in some hot water from the UCI for their refusal to enforce the radio ban in professional cycling races in the United States. Well, Pat McQuaid had some comments on that and sent a stern letter to USA Cycling, and perhaps at least as a result of that, USA Cycling has now reversed their decision. In a statement announced on their website, they said, based on concern raised by Cycling's International Federation, USA Cycling reversed its earlier decision and will continue the ban on the use of race radios in all national-level competition, including USA Cycling's national racing calendar and national championship events. According to Bill Peterson, president of the USA Cycling Board of Directors and US Pro board member, quote, after consultation with the UCI, it is apparent that allowing race radios in domestic NRC races would negatively impact the UCI-registered teams and riders who would no longer be allowed to compete in these events. The absence of UCI-registered teams and riders would have a highly detrimental impact, not only on team sponsors, but also on the hardworking NRC promoters and sponsors and communities who support these races, unquote. Steve Johnson, the CEO of USA Cycling, was quoted as saying, quote, while we remain convinced of the value of race radios with regard to their potential for increased safety for riders and spectators, we will respect the UCI's request to continue the ban of race radios in national calendar events and national championships. And while the radio ban is definitely the cause célèbre of the moment in professional cycling, the one that has had the longest legs lately is the Alberto Contador case. On March the 24th, the UCI posted the following information in a press release on their website. The International Cycling Union today decided, within the time frame stipulated by the regulations, to appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Lausanne against the Spanish Cycling Federation's findings in the case of Alberto Contador. He was acquitted after testing positive for clenbuterol during an in-competition test carried out on 21st July 2010. The decision to appeal comes after an in-depth study of the file received from the Spanish Cycling Federation. Translation: the UCI has decided to appeal Contador's acquittal for clenbuterol to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, arguing that Alberto Contador should be given a sanction as a result of his test during the Tour de France for clenbuterol. It should be noted that the date of the press release is March 24th, which was the last day on which the UCI could make this appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Pat McQuaid's been quoted in a number of sources surrounding this case recently, saying that he feels that the Contador decision was more political than based on scientific fact. He was quoted by the Associated Press as saying, quote, "The Spanish Federation received a huge amount of pressure from outside, including from the Prime Minister and so forth. So it left a great deal of doubt in a lot of people's minds as to whether there was influence or not. They said there was no influence, but the perception was that there could have been. In order to clear up all of that, it was important we give it to an independent board, such as the Court of Arbitration for Sport." McQuaid said, "We will accept whatever decision they make. I think from the credibility of the sport's point of view, for the fans of cycling, for the family of cycling, and everybody, it's important we get a result that everybody believes in." The Court of Arbitration for Sport accepted the appeal of the acquittal and said that they told everyone involved that the court is, quote, "ready to establish a procedural calendar allowing for the settlement of the dispute before the end of June," unquote, leaving the way open for the Contador case to be decided before the Tour de France. The head of the United States anti-doping agency, Travis Tygart, weighed in with his opinion about the Contador case, calling the Spanish Cycling Federation's acquittal of Alberto Contador a flip-flop in the case, and saying that it could potentially send the wrong message to both fans and athletes. Weighing in before the UCI's decision, Tygart said, quote, "If there are questions about whether the outcome is fair and just, based on the rules and particular facts, they should appeal to the Supreme Court of the sport. WADA plays the great equalizer to ensure justice is even and in line with the facts and the rules around the world. Clearly, what has been reported was a flip-flop. There was a one-year ban, and then there were statements from the Prime Minister, and then there's a zero sanction. I don't know what the right outcome is. I haven't seen the evidence. But from a perception standpoint, something is not right there. Something should be looked into. And it looks like it is right at the heart of the lack of independence when you have a national federation which might not have the expertise, which might not have the funding, which has to go after and prosecute a national hero who just won the biggest cycling event in the world. That is not an easy thing to do for anyone. There is a whole level and layer of facts that investigators need to tease out and see if it is a defendable and provable point. But that is why the process is critically important. Regardless of the outcome, there is a process in place now at this level that we should give all of us comfort that WADA, the independent agency, is ultimately overseeing the decision." So the Alberto Contador case ending has yet to be written, much more to come in the weeks and months ahead. Well, that's going to do it for the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. And before we go, I just want to thank our show sponsors. Once again, Jensen USA for great products, great prices, and great customer service. Don't forget that they've got some amazing deals right now on Focus Bicycles. Go to www.jensenusa.com/ the Fredcast. Also, let's not forget our friends at Epic Planet, makers of the Epic Rides DVDs. Go to epicplanet.tv/Fredcast and use the promo code WINE at checkout to get 20% off their new Epic Napa Valley. We'd also like to thank you for your donations to the Fredcast. We sincerely appreciate those of you who have taken it upon yourself to help donate, to help us defray the costs associated with the Fredcast. We very much appreciate your help. For those of you who haven't yet done so, go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the donate link. Speaking of the website, www.thefredcast.com is where you can keep up with what's going on with the show. On a day-to-day basis, another great way is Facebook. Go ahead and click the Facebook link on the website, or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Fredcast. Of course, you can send comments at any time via email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, or use the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Well, now it's time for PodSafe Cycling Music, and this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by CadenceRevolution.com, the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members' content of weekly 30 and 60-minute cardio mixes and bi-weekly coaching tracks to get the world moving. Go to www.CadenceRevolution.com. And this week's song is by Audra, and it's called 100 Years Old. And that's about how I feel after having many months without a vacation, and that's why Mrs. Fredcast and I are heading out for a couple of extra days. So if the next show is slightly delayed, you'll understand why. I appreciate that. Mahalo to you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed and for telling your friends about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. By the way, also don't forget our other show, the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable Podcast. We do it every other week at www.the-spokesmen.com. It's where we have the opportunity to explore more news stories in depth. We talk to bloggers, podcasters, media folks, attorneys, enthusiasts, and of course, people within the cycling industry as well. Check it out if you hadn't. I think that you will really enjoy it. It's www.the-spokesmen.com. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Once again, thanks so much for being a Fredcast listener. You have no idea how much I appreciate you and how much I love bringing you the Fredcast on a regular basis. We'll be back in another week or so with another episode of the Fredcast, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Tell you what to know. Don't ever let anyone tell you what to care about. 'Cause you'll feel like you're 100 years old. You'll feel like you're 100 years old. 'Cause it's about the time for that. 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 about the time for